You are listening to the Punk News Podcast. This is our annual Christmas episode, our annual Wotan Day, our annual Soul Invictus Day. But Merry Christmas to you all. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. We're going to play some songs. Let us roll the dice of destiny to get started to see what order we will play songs in. I will be 1 to 2. Sam will be 3 to 4. And will be 5 to 6. And that was the order we will play. Here's the dice. Sam goes first.
Sweet.
Then M, then me. Woo! Sam, what song are you gonna play? M, what song are you gonna play? And then I will say the song that I will play.
You need 2 songs from me?
Well, one right now.
One right now. Okay, so I'm gonna play Bouncing Souls Home for the Holidays, only because you know I'm Bouncing Souls addicted, maybe. And Home for the Holidays in general just means the world to me because literally, why did I dedicate like 10 million years of my life to this? But here we are.
I will follow that with Creeper's cover of The Pogues' Fairy Tale of New York. It's a great duet between Will and Hannah, and it's really cool. So, yeah.
Do they leave in the controversial lyric
No.
segment? They do not.
They change it to Maggot.
See, I think they should leave it in because the point of the song isn't that these are two cool people. The point of the song is that these are two kind of people down on the outs and they're not very nice people. And they're singing about how nice Christmas is, ironically. So I think that word should be left in the song because it's the characters singing it. The Pogues aren't saying, oh, this is a cool word to say. But that's just my opinion. I will be playing the new version of Black Dahlia's Drinking Up Christmas, which used to be a dwarf song. And the new version is a kind of a lounge type song with Blag and Dexter of the Offspring singing Drinking Up Christmas. And we will be right back, Jack. Merry Christmas.
was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank, and an old man said to me, you won't see another one. And then he sang a song of red mountain dew. Yeah, I'd turn my face away and dreamed about you. God on a lucky one came in 18 to 1. I've got this feeling, this year's for me and you. So happy Christmas, I love you, baby. I can see a better time when all our dreams come true.
A Christmas party, had a fifth of cold Bacardi, saw a Santa Claus in red with an aching head, but he wasn't very merry, in fact he was kinda scary. Ho ho hell was all he said. He took a drink and then another two beneath the sink, a song turning blue, and in a wink he's up the chimney out the flue, screaming like a drunken Ebenezer Scrooge, like I'm drinking up Christmas.
There's a guy new job, I'm a lazy slime.
I'm drinking
thinking of Christmas.
Tell your daddy and mom that I came to rob them.
A holiday hero, yeah, but
I'm a zero with you, Tachiro.
I'm drinking up Christmas tonight. All right.
Making a list and checking the kids that he feels like wrecking. As he stumbles through the night, all pink and white, and he was just getting going. In fact, when the booze stopped flowing, he challenged Frosty to a fight. He said, come on, I got a gift for you, so bring it on. I'll leave you black and blue a little song. Santa Claus is through, and he got a nose as red as you know, 'cause I'm drinking up Christmas.
'Cause I got no job, I'm a lazy slobbin'.
I'm drinking up Christmas.
Tell your daddy and mom that I came to rob them.
A holiday hero, yeah, I'm
less than zero with you, Tachiro.
I'm drinking up Christmas tonight. All right. I'm drinking up
And we're back, and we got some interesting things to talk about. Oh, and so this is the Christmas episode. We're going to play some Christmas tunes, and then we're just going to kind of freestyle a little bit and cover some news of the week. So anyway, so this was kind of cool. We talked about this last week. Jello Biafra put his car up for sale in order to his 1989 Toyota Celica GT Ragtop with like 260,000 miles or something like that up for sale. And he thought it would get less than $8,000, but he was surprised that that car is kind of a collectible car now. So he was hoping to get, I don't know, $6,000, $7,000, $5,000 for it. Well, it sold. And not only did it sell, it sold for $33,600, which is about six times what Jello expected. And frankly, probably about six to eight times what that car is worth. And about five times what a comparable car with about half or a quarter of the mileage is worth. So it appears Jello's behind on the upholstery has great value. And I'm glad about it. I think this is like a really cool thing. And I was actually thinking about this in that right now we live in an age where punk collectibles are more expensive and more valuable than ever. And I'm not necessarily opposed to that. I think it's cool. Well, I'm of two minds. I think it's cool that punk is being celebrated and cherished and valued as opposed to not being valued. But on the other hand, is, you know, like you can get Darby Crash's boots or whatever for like $20,000, but they're just a pair of boots, you know? So is worshiping punk rockers as deities, is that missing the entire point of punk? Well, maybe it is. That being said, at the end of the day, I think this is fantastic because but the reason I really like this is when they sell Darby Crash's boots for $20,000 or whatever, Darby Crash isn't getting that money. He's dead. His family isn't getting that money. Some person that stole his boots in 1982 that sold them to someone else, that person is getting the money. It's kind of like how a lot of famous artists died broke and now their paintings are worth $300 million, which is kind of weird and lame, you know. However, in this case, it's Jello selling his things directly to the audience. And actually, that brings up a whole other point, doesn't it, that I'm going to mention too. But it's Jello selling his things to the audience. Jello is getting the money, although actually it's going to Alternative Tentacles Records to fund the creation of more art. So I think this is a win all around. I hope the person that gets it, you know, is psyched on it and is happy. And I do wonder what they're going to do with this. But the other point, though, is we talked about how it was kind of cool that the Steve Albini family was selling Steve Albini stuff at kind of a raised price. But it was more controversial within the punk news comment section and the punk news world about Fat Mike, like selling his own stuff or even Tim Armstrong selling his paintings for pretty high prices, and people really are just buying them because they want a piece of Tim Armstrong. They want a piece of Fat Mike. I actually didn't have a problem with Fat Mike selling stuff because it was an auction. You know, the Tim Armstrong thing I'm not quite as comfortable with because it's like, buy this painting for $5,000. Well, is that really worth $5,000, or is it people just wanting to be a part, have a part of Tim Armstrong? So the question being is this any different than the Fat Mike sales? Is this any different than the Steve Albini sales? And if they're not, is it all good all around? Em, what's your take?
I think it is different than the Fat Mike sales. I think it's closer maybe to the Steve Albini stuff. I think it's its own thing, kind of like regardless, but I think if you are going to compare it, I'd say the Steve Albini stuff is a better comparison because, like, this all the money's going to Alternative Tentacles. With the Steve Albini stuff, all that money's going to his family and helping, you know, with like costs and different things like that, because funerals and mourning's really expensive. So I think this is a great thing for Alternative Tentacles and for Jello and for whoever bought the car. I really hope the person that bought the car actually uses it, you know, and doesn't just kind of keep it and be like, oh, this is Jello's car and that's it. Because like he put a lot of time and effort based off of the listing that we talked about last week into maintaining it. Like he's been driving this thing since like, what was it, 1991 or something or earlier? Like he's been going on to like spoken word tours. He's been doing everything in it. So I really hope whoever paid over $33,000 for it uses it. And then I think it's acceptable to put it up as a like relic after it can no longer be used. Cause I think that's the thing that's like very, very punk about, like preservation of stuff within kind of the punk stuff is you can tell how much it's been used and loved and played and everything. You know, I don't want to see a pristine guitar in a case. I want to see something that's been set on fire. I want to see something that's like been destroyed, something that, oh my God, this still exists, like a fragment of this still exists. Cause I think that's kind of, you know, what the punk ethos is you get something, you make it last, and then when it can't last any longer, then you kind of put it up as, look at this, look at everything it's done. I was very surprised at the amount that it sold for. That's wild. I didn't expect it to get that high. I think it's great. And what was it? There were 40 bids overall. So I'm kind of wondering, like, at what point was it effectively sold, you know? Like, did someone kind of, like, swoop in and be like, hey, I'm paying this much for it? It's interesting. I want to know. Sam, what's your take?
There is 58,000 views on that when John took this photo. John, was about 50,000 of those views you? maybe, right? I think 5 of those views might have been me because it was just like, you know, it's interesting. This is crazy to me that it went for $33,000. I think the last time we spoke, what was it like? It wasn't even like 10,000 yet, right? About this?
I don't think so.
I think it was like eight, which was beyond the expected value at the time.
Yeah, that's insane. I was like, literally at some point, it did skyrocket. And I assume that there might have been a bidding war of some sort that happened to this. I do think that if you were going for something like this, you were definitely a Jello fan, or someone that like likes to collect punk memorabilia. Like, you know, there is a subset of people out there that really, really likes punk memorabilia. The museum, or people that donated to the museum. So, you know, that has a lot of money, apparently. So that's definitely a thing. When it comes to this, I do think that this is closer to the Steve Albini thing than a Fat Mike thing, because when Fat Mike did his vault, he just says, I have all this stuff, I want to get rid of it, right? There wasn't, I don't remember them him saying like, oh, there's a reason, like I'm using this money to like fund things or like other projects for it. I think we assumed that's what he was doing for it, but you know, it wasn't like specifically laid out. The Steve Albini thing, it was like literally specifically laid out that his family was selling his stuff to, you know, help with costs of things. You know, and again, this is like stuff of a person that recently passed away, you know. Jello's live and well that I know of. And, you know, he clearly probably needed money to make sure that his other endeavors were going to be funded. And I respect that of him because he laid it out in the sales pitch, pretty clear that whatever he's taking a product or, you know, a commodity of some sort, that belongs to him, he wrote out the entire listing. Specifically, like, you know, stating that it was Jell-O. Like, it's this is not like, oh yeah, a 1989 Toyota Celica is up for sale. This is punk legend Jell-O Biafras. Like, you know, it was marketed as such. So, yeah, I think it's more along the lines of that. I think that's why maybe this is more acceptable in some people's eyes than what Fat Mike does or did. Also, like, he started the bidding at a very reasonable rate, so it's not like, you know, it started at like $300, not, well, like $30,000, I mean. For a car. I cannot believe that this sold like this sold more like this sold for at like almost the same price as a brand new version of a Subaru Crosstrek.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, this is crazy.
Actually, that is this sold for more than a nice used Corvette that's got about 30,000 miles on it. That's crazy, isn't it?
Nuts, which again tells me they definitely was buying it because it was Jell-O.
Well,
Like,
sure,
there's
yeah.
no other reason because any reasonable, rational person would be like, oh, if I need an actual acceptable car that doesn't have odd smells and or cracks in the seats, I'll be buying another car, not this specific one, you know.
Well, congrats to Jell-O and the buyer, and I hope the buyer enjoys it, which I think they probably will. It would be interesting. I would like to get an update of what actually becomes of it. We probably won't. And actually, one last thing is, do you all think it's like a person, or do you think it's like some sort of organization, or do you think it's like a lot of paint, a lot of paintings, and even stolen Egyptian, Greek, and Roman artifacts? Do you think it's like some rich guy in like Russia or whatever that's just going to like hide it somewhere forever?
I don't think it's a rich guy in Russia or any other weird like country out there. I think it's like someone like Tony Hawk that probably bought this. Like, you know, a notable human that like loves punk.
Well, I am all for that. Here's something that's and it's honestly seemed like I really didn't see a whole lot of people saying anything negative about this, which I don't think they should. I think this is cool and positive and fun. Here's something a bit more controversial, and I'm just gonna spit some ideas here. And Sam and Em, I want you to check me if I'm off here. So, a lot of people probably know this person in the punk scene called Aaron Micklow. And actually, I'm kind of even reticent to even talk about her because I'm not really interested in, you know, giving her more attention. But that being said, she is a known person. And for the past, I don't know, 4 years, Sam, you think about 4 years she's been around or so?
Know how long she's been around, but she's definitely been around for multiple years doing content.
Well said, well said. Sam said she's been doing content. So basically, actually, I'm not even sure the name. I'm going to see if I can pull up the name of like her her brand that she goes by. Give me, I'm going to pull it up. But basically, you probably know about her, but she would do a lot of interviews with Last Rockers TV. That was her thing. She used to do, well, until like maybe this past month, she used to do a lot of interviews with punk bands. She kind of made it a thing that she would go to punk rock bowling and kind of go around punk rock bowling and post content of her hanging out at punk rock bowling and her kind of interviewing bands. And some people liked her interviews. And actually, she did some somewhat in-depth interviews, you know. A lot of people, and actually, let's take this one piece at a time. A lot of people felt as though she wasn't really in the scene for the right reasons, and she just wanted attention and didn't really care about punk and maybe wasn't even contributing to the punk culture. And I think, and check me if I'm wrong here, I think the reason people felt that way is because in all her videos, she dressed pretty skimpily, if you will, you know, low-cut tops, short skirts, and that kind of a thing. And people felt as though she was almost trying to be an Instagram model that was parading as punk instead of actually being involved in punk culture. And some people, I guess some people would say that they felt that she was kind of siphoning off punk in order to raise her own popularity, but didn't really understand or contribute to what punk actually is. And my personal take is, maybe that's right, but I wasn't a fan. I wasn't a hater. I didn't really care for her content, but I wasn't annoyed by it to really do anything or even content on it or follow it or anything. However, during that entire time, the past 4 years or so, there's been a lot of posts about her, many of them negative. If you're in the punk rock bowling, the unofficial punk rock bowling Facebook group, which is pretty large, hundreds of thousands of people, I think, almost every day or every other day, someone would post something making fun of her or whatever. And then people would join in and, you know, say, oh yeah, Erin, she's corny or even nastier things than that, you know? I'm not a fan of her, but I always felt that was actually, there's only 13,000 people in the punk rock bowling Facebook group. I was wrong, but it's still it's still a very active group with dozens of posts every day. So anyways, I was not a fan, but I can never really get down with hundreds of people throwing bricks at one person. To me, it just, you know, to me, if you're annoyed by her, the best weapon is to ignore her, and then she will go away. You know what I mean? If you don't like her, you know. Although, I should be fair, a lot of people seem to enjoy her content and say they like her content. And with the internet, it's extremely difficult, if not impossible, to gauge that ratio as the fans or not fans on anything. You know what I mean? Like if you go to any political post, it's beat up woman and throw her in a van, you know, without even, you know, telling her who they are. Some people be like, that's horrible. And then other people are like, yeah, that's great. Get those people out of our country, blah, blah. And it's difficult to gauge what the actual majority response is on the internet. Very difficult to do. So with Erin, I'm saying is, it seemed to me that most people disliked her, but that might not be accurate. She definitely had some fans, and it was unclear to me as to whether or not she wanted everyone to like her or she didn't care and she was just thriving on the attention and thereby building her brand. I don't know, right? So that's kind of the background for Erin Miklow, which the listeners probably... Sam, you think the listeners know about Erin Miklow? I think they probably do, but maybe they don't.
I think if you've been around the punk sphere, especially punk rock bowling, that type of brand of music, like punk music, you definitely have seen her. They might not know her by name because she went through an alias, right?
Oh, she did?
Well, you know, what is it called? The Last Rocker TV. So they might not know her full name, right? So there's that. And then there's also, like, you know, subset of people that, like, don't even care about social media, but, like, still listens to, like, Descendants, you know? I think they probably have seen her before.
And actually, I don't think I properly described the actual controversy, which I'm going to describe right now. So she would do a lot of Instagram posts of like her in a bikini or her showing a lot of skin. and just being like, look, aren't I sexy or whatever? And you could look at that of two ways. You could say, well, that's women's self-empowerment. Or you could say she's objectifying herself for male views, which is not punk, I would think. Or maybe it is. So first of all, Sam and M, do you, and then we'll address the recent development. Oh, and actually, she mentioned there was actually at least a couple of actual physical controversies with her. There was a big thing where she wanted to get into punk rock bowling for free and was refused entry. So she did a whole series about how she didn't get into punk rock bowling for free, which even I don't get into punk rock bowling. Well, I don't know why I said even I. I would say as if I...
You work very hard for it.
Yes, but however, yeah. I'm not surprised that a male promoters would rather have a pretty young woman than me. So I shouldn't say even I don't get in for free. You know what I mean? But also, and this was not cool. A little while ago, she was jumped in a bathroom and beat up. You know, which I don't approve of that at all. But because I guess people felt she was a fake punk or whatever. So anyways, I'm going to throw this question. I don't know if Sam and M have strong opinion or not, and then we'll address the second half of the controversy. Is a young Aaron Micklow, you know, interviewing bands, but also really, you know, wearing bikinis a lot and kind of just doing sexy poses. Is that punk rock and self-empowerment, or is that using punk to objectify yourself in order to increase your own social awareness brand, if you will? I don't know. Do either of you have strong feelings about that one way or another? Look, actually, and I'm going to draw a parallel here. Amy Taylor, she wears a lot of bikinis, you know, but I don't feel as though she's necessarily being, well, she's sexualized, but she's sexualizing herself. But I don't feel like she's doing it just for the male view. I feel like she's doing it for self-empowerment, you know, this is how I want to express myself, you know, regardless of how people react, you know. Or you could say she's challenging modern views on how women should dress and or act, you see. I think most people would agree that's Amy Taylor's vibe, you know. So what's the vibe here? Is it the same vibe?
Go for it.
So I look like a normal human being. I don't have too many tattoos, and I don't have my tits out all the time. So, like, you know, I don't necessarily dress super punk either as a normal human being. Yes, I wear occasional band t-shirt, right?
Sam, you wear bondage pants. I've seen you in bondage pants many times.
I don't wear bondage pants.
Yes, I do. What do you call those red and black pants? There's red and black plaid.
You mean
pants?
Plaid? I wear plaid pants.
Those are bondage pants. Those are called bondage pants.
Only if they have the straps and the rivets.
Yeah, oh. I don't have straps, nor do I have rivets. Yeah.
There I go again, policing women's clothing. I'm sorry, Sam. Go ahead.
But I would have to say, like, you know, there isn't one specific look to punk, right? Historically, punk women, like, you know, the founding, I guess, mothers or peoples of punk, punk ladies of the world, you know, they just wore whatever they wanted to wear. So if it was like super low cut, it was, you know, low cut, probably a ripped t-shirt type of thing, you know. I don't think anyone necessarily wore bikini tops all day as, you know, I guess their uniform for being a punk at all. So I'm just going to put that out there. Right. I was like, there is really no one look. However, when it comes to Erin, she did have this entire persona created with a lot of spiky hair, which is either gelatin or glue in her hair. And she wore a lot of like very low tops and, you know, a lot of things there. I don't even know like what her background is in punk or whatever. It's very plausible that, you know, she was doing this for attention and looking for rock stars or punk stars, what do you want to call them? to give her attention. Apparently she likes to travel the world and interview people. But I would have to say her latest look is pretty like stark in the way that she used to look or would look around punk circles. Which I'm like in my brain, I'm like, wow, I was like, she's really good at like code switching when she needs to. When she's hanging out with punk, she's gonna look a certain way. When she's like, trying to get glam and, talk to like rich men, she's gonna look another way, things like
Sam,
that.
what does I'm being honest here. What does code switching actually mean? I have a vague idea what it means, but I'm not sure I know what it means.
Well, essentially that as a person of color, right, I was like, there is something called code switching for me where I can switch off, I guess not even a personality, but more of me being less Chinese to like, non-Chinese people. And then when I'm with my Chinese people, I'll be like really Chinese, So that I think that's like the easiest way for me to like, I guess, explain it. And it's also to like make other people feel more comfortable.
So you what you're saying is someone might alter their look and or behavior in order to fit in with a certain scene or to project that as an association with a certain scene to other people. Is that what code switching is?
Yeah, pretty much.
Fair enough. So that's Sam, is that your take on Aaron in the punk scene?
I think so. I don't know her personally. I don't really follow her so much because this is like way too much happening here right now. Her presence on social media is very, I'm an influencer type, which I'm the type of person that likes on at least on social media likes content when it's like knowledgeable content, not like, oh, look at me, I'm doing this fun thing. I'm not really interested in that.
So before we get to the current developments, is do you have a take? And actually, another question is: do you have a take on Aaron in the punk, Aaron in the punk scene, interviewing bands, but also doing sexy bikini shots? Is that punk, or is that women empowerment, or is that just playing into the system that already exists? And though, is it even fair to ask that question? Because rarely do punk interviewers say, oh, well, you're not punk. Well, actually, that's not true. Well, I would say rarely,
Depends on the case.
I was going to say, rarely do male punk interviewers get told they're not punk, which actually that happens all the time. I get told I'm not punk all the time, but it's a different vibe. You know what I mean? It is a different vibe. Like, if someone said to me, John, you're not punk, I'd be like, fuck you. You know what I mean? But if you say a woman is not punk because she looks hot, that's somehow more intrusive and rude, if you will. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Like if you post a picture of yourself in a Speedo, you're gonna have a different reaction kind of
But then
thing.
again, if I interviewed bands in a Speedo, I would get a, I would probably actually get insulted for that as well. You know what I mean? So maybe it is the
True.
same thing, you know? So anyway, M, do you have any comment on prior to the recent developments, or should I address the recent developments?
Yeah, sure. I'll weigh in real quick. So I know of Erin Miklow, same thing. I don't know her personally. I don't follow her on social media. Her videos used to pop up all the time when I was young and I was on YouTube, and it was more like I didn't really watch a lot of them, but in the thumbnail it's like, oh my God, her hair is so cool, and like I like her style and that's neat and whatever. But with like clothing, the way that I see it is if it's something where you feel good in it, then wear it, and it doesn't matter how revealing it is or how conservative it is or whatever. Like you can walk around, well, I mean, not really, but like you can walk around and whatever feels the best to you, no matter what that may be. So that's where I stand with kind of like the clothing, because like Sam, I'm kind of the same. Like I don't look punk all the time. Like it's I have a plaid shirt on, and that's kind of, you know, the vibe with like kind of army surplus pants. They don't match. That's not intentional. That's just, it's comfortable, and there we are.
Comfort is
But
great.
comfort is key.
Especially when you're standing for 3 hours waiting for your band.
Exactly. Yeah, you want to like be in whatever is comfortable to you. And like that's the thing with like Amy Taylor is again, I'm not speaking for her. I don't know her, whatever. I am someone who gets really, really, really hot and really sweaty really fast. So her like doing fucking like acrobatics on stage, being so energetic, it's like it makes sense why she's wearing a bikini top, because she must be like sweltering,
Oh,
you
yeah.
know? Like she can wear that and move around and do everything. Like their song, Tiny Bikini, you know, kind of covers that and the sexism she faces because of it, and like all that kind of stuff, and the objectification she faces because of it, when it's just like, I just want to wear this. I want to wear my bikini. I want to wear my shorts. I want to wear what I feel good in, and that's it. So I think in cases like that, you know, 100% it's clear cut. It's that's what she's wearing because she wants to. In other cases where it's like, you know, like a model on a billboard, it's like, are you comfortable in that? Is that something that you actually want to wear? Chances are no, right? So with this, with some of her stuff, it does not look very comfortable. You know, if you want to show off your body, go for it, do it. All for it, as long as it's your choice and you're not kind of, you know, doing the I have to suck in my stomach, I have to hold like this pose, I have to look like a Playboy bunny or whatever for approval. As long as you're doing it for yourself, that's all that matters. So there's my two cents. I don't know what she's doing, but that's my two cents on just clothing in general.
I actually had to slightly disagree with you, Em, and one thing is, you think that most models aren't comfortable like in photo shoots, which may be true, but in my experience, most models like being models a lot, you know, otherwise they wouldn't be models, because it's a pretty hard job. I mean, in some respects, it's a
Yeah.
very hard job. So.
But there are certain things where it's like if you see like someone in a like designer corset, they're not comfortable.
They can't breathe.
Yeah,
Yeah, like they're not physically comfortable. They're
but
not
I mean,
gonna wear that.
but
I get what you're saying. I think a lot of people who do it definitely love it. But I don't think they're wearing the clothes they're wearing in the shoots on a day-to-day basis.
what? Well, yeah, I don't think they are either. But we're getting off topic, anyways. So, and you don't necessarily have an opinion one way or another whether or not like Aaron taking bikini shots and posing thirst traps, frankly, or and are they thirst traps? Is I'm extending this discussion. If you put a sexy picture of you up on Instagram, is that by definition a thirst trap?
Yes,
Okay,
I
so
think so.
then is Aaron Miklow doing thirst traps in punk interviews? Are those in conflict with each other, or they're not? Or you don't know because you don't know her mindset.
I don't think she's doing thirst traps necessarily in the interviews. I think some of the posts on Instagram definitely are like the one where she's in a bikini, but like she's just kind of showing off her butt. Or like the picture that's used in this where it's very booby.
So, you know, and I don't know if I have a real, I'll throw in two cents real quick on this is, to me, those pictures are very much objectifying. Well, she's saying objectify me, but she wants to be objectified. So is that punk rock? Well, here's the
Wait, hold
question.
on. I that might actually be a reference to punk rock.
What, being objectified?
Descendants?
Oh, I wanted,
Oh,
you're right. I
yeah.
want, well, there you
Hey.
go. There you go.
Duh.
Nice.
Sam with the deep cut punk. Sam is the most punk of us all. So
Nice.
anyway, well, let's move this
Yes.
conversation on because I don't want to drag it out. So very recently, there's been a big development at the Aaron Miklow headquarters. So she was doing, you know, the spiky hair stuff for 4 or 5 years or more. Then all of a sudden, the spiky hair stuff is all completely gone, totally gone. And now she's like posting pictures of herself in like night dress, not night dresses. What do you call it? What do you call that? Cocktail dress and that kind of thing. Her in the bikini on the beach. And she did a couple of ones that were. So she did one where she has one where she's holding a bouquet. But there's money in the bouquet. And she says, one of the best bouquets I've ever received from a man. Gorgeous red roses plus cash to pay my bills so I can stress less. And
Oh.
so, and then actually, Sandor LaVey, of course, not daughter of Anton LaVey, but the ex-wife of Anton LaVey's son said, does he have a brother asking for a friend? And then she did another one. Where it's her in kind of a nightclub red leather dress kind of skimpy, and it says, "Aaron is looking for a husband. Friends and followers, you have a mission. Find me a husband. Here's what I'm looking for. Looks, I'm okay with a 6 or 7. Height, I don't need someone to be tall, just taller than me, 5 foot 8 and up. Job, must be successful and not a moocher. Must be richer than me or equal. I don't pay for men or do 50-50. Someone who has good personality, good morals, and is smart and driven. And then safety and feeling heard in a relationship are very important to me. Send me options." So I don't, and Sam, Em and Sam, I don't know if this is a genuine post or if this is just like content farming or trying to grow content or grow followers. But to me, this proves that all along, like there was a big debate on whether or not Erin doing what she was doing was punk or was contributing to the punk culture, you know. I think the recent turn of events proves that it was all not that I'm surprised at all. I mean, I'm not surprised in the least. The whole time it really was just content farming, and for some reason she viewed punk as an avenue to kind of increase her followers and online presence and fame, which to me, if I was going to increase, if my plan was to leech onto a culture and increase my followers, I would either do heavy metal if I was a good-looking woman, or I would do like jam bands, you know. I think that's what I would do, not punk rock, which is really still kind of the most sensitive to those kinds of actions, even though punk rock certainly isn't pure. So I mean, and so of course, if you go to her Instagram, it's almost all insults. What do you take bring to the table? How very punk. I'm a 10, but I make nerd memes. Saddest trend ever. Can't find man, please finding me other men. Sure, I'm used goods, but I still run good.
Oh, gross.
The comments then pass the vibe and they wonder why women are struggling to find good husbands. Oh, so that's someone defending her.
Oh my
So another
God.
woman says, this is extremely cute. I hope you get some hits. Someone else says, as long as you have them liberty spikes, I'm your man. So it looks like it's. Here's someone else. One person just said, keep looking. Someone else said, it's sad that money is mentioned from someone who's all about the equal rights. So, anyways, it appears it's mostly negative, some positive comments. But I guess the question, A, three questions. A, do you two feel it was all a sham and it was really all just her trying to raise her notoriety and she saw punk as a vehicle to do so? I do. Not that I even care. Like I said, I think the most useful weapon is to ignore her, not to attack her, because that only gives her more attention. Ignore her and she'll go away, you know. Second, I can't remember what my other two questions were. I guess second, do you find this post odd? And is this demeaning to women or empowering to women? And C, do you think she just wants to be an influencer? Because honestly, this post actually comes off as a little unhinged to me. Like it's a little comes off as kind of freaky or scary to me, you know what I mean? So I don't know, Em and Sam and Em, you where do you stand on this very hot button topic, which really was a big part of the punk discussion this past 2 weeks? And then I'm never going to mention Aaron Micklow ever again, ever.
So she, I personally hope that she is actually into some punk music. I'm not gonna say all. I'm just gonna say some because this is a very niche market for her to pinpoint to be like, I'm going to, interview bands and like, be the queen of punk or whatever, right? to do. But they need again, there it might have also been like a void of someone like this in the scene. So, you know, she, I guess, filled that gap that is not necessarily needed for some people in that. When it comes to her and her evolution, right? She does have a passes account. So what this passes account looks like is almost like an OnlyFans account.
Oh my God.
Sam, are all passes only fans or what's a passes account?
I'm not exactly sure because it's the first time I'm encountering it, but however, I'm looking at her passes account right now. It's passes.com. Essentially, you have to buy in memberships, like X amount of money for a month for personalized DMs from her. So she's definitely making some kind of money. And, you know, in this account, she is, you know, I guess putting out their sexy photo sets and videos and stuff as a model or a content creator. So it kind of makes sense to me why she went from, you know, a punk looking like person with Liberty spike, like with spikes and stuff, to almost like Dita Von T's like pinup, you know, doing glam all the time type of stuff, because this is clearly making her money. You know, you just mentioned a picture of her like with like roses and like a whole wad of cash. Hey, who knows what's happening there? If this is a wad of cash that she got from a membership person, you know, like accounts like this, I think has like opened up an entirely like new level of like elevating a personality to another spot, because back in the day you would actually have to like make it big to be an actual personality that like, you know, people paid attention to. There's like so many quote unquote online creators now on Instagram that has like OnlyFans accounts that does like, you know, all sorts of things. It doesn't even have to be like sexual things that they're doing on these accounts. It just might just be like, you know, pictures, like, you know, thirst trap photos of them and stuff, and just like messages back and forth. So I think she's definitely one doing this as a content creator now to elevate her platform. I can't even like, I don't even know how many people like actually like follows her. But like, you know, she's definitely moving in that direction, and it's definitely making her money. As for Erin's looking for a husband, I think this is definitely a joke. I don't think she necessarily needs help looking for a husband, because there is clearly people on her, like, you know, on the comment sections stating that they're into her. There's also a subset of people that's not into her. The fact that she used looks, I'm okay with a six or a seven. It seems very topical right now, especially with the kids saying 6-7 for no apparent reason because it's nonsensical. Also, like, really, I was like, you're really asking for a six or a seven? Like, that, what does that, like, honestly, what does that even mean? You know, I know what it means. I'm just saying, because everyone has different taste, right?
Yes.
Yes. Also, like, the job must be successful, Nana Moocher. Like, what? Must be richer than me or equal? Like, okay, richer than you? Like, are you looking for like a really, really, really rich person? Or like, do you not make a lot of money? Like, I'm not even sure what that even means.
Sam, I'm going to jump in. I mean, saying someone must be richer than me kind of shows an immature and almost total lack of understanding of finance. like the word more rich, that the word rich doesn't even actually mean anything. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many different ways to value a person's net worth or their income or their debt and work. You know what I mean? That's like richer is how like a 7-year-old would describe net worth or money. You know what I mean? It's a weird way to phrase that.
Well, the other thing is, if you're actually marrying, looking for a husband, and you're trying to marry for love, who the hell cares how much this person makes? You know? I was like, it says I don't pay for men or do 50-50. It's like, honestly, I was like, if you're doing this for the right reasons, I was like, if you have to pay for him, you have to pay for him sometimes. You know? I was like, it really, I was like, it's this does not even make sense. I think she's like looking for people to hit her up and contact her. And I don't know if like once you contact her, she's like, oh, hey, if you want to talk to me, go on my pass account. Send me $20 a month and I'll talk to you. What is your take on this?
The first kind of thing I looked at it, I read it, and then I read the caption, and it was taking a page from Bebe Rexha's book. And I'm pretty sure when Bebe Rexha did it, it was a joke. It was just kind of like a haha, I'm done with dating apps, and this would be a funny thing to do. I don't think that she was serious, so I think it's just kind of Aaron's just kind of jumping on that. I have seen a couple other posts that are sort of similar to this, and in those ones, like, it 100% is a joke. Because it is very hard to meet people, and it's just kind of like a ha 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 sort of thing. The six or the seven definitely stood out for me too, because it's like, yeah, it's the 6-7 meme, it's everywhere.
Can we just stop kids from saying it? Like, it, like every time they say it, we just hear like.
Just hear the parents from Charlie Brown or the adults from Charlie Brown.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's we just don't need this.
Had to look up what it meant. I felt so like
It means nothing.
out of touch. I know.
It is nonsensical.
At least with like words, you can use them,
Yeah, well, they just
kind
ruined, this generation just ruined like counting for us. Even
Well,
like the ca yeah.
I'll go ahead, and
I think the last two bullet points are like real, like the good personality, smart, driven, safety, feeling heard, all that kind of stuff. I think that's true. I don't think anything else is. If it is, it's a pretty interesting way to go about it. And I agree 100%. If you do say like, oh, I'm looking for, someone who's richer than me or whatever, and then the I don't pay for men or do 50-50, it's like you're hoping that they will pay for you. And also, a relationship is a partnership. No one should be outranked by their partner, right? Like everything should be 50-50, right? Like you do 50% of the housework, I do 50% of the housework. It's not all gonna fall to me, it's not all gonna fall to you. So that is my thoughts.
Well, my closing thoughts on this, and I am kind of loath to give her attention. Not that I hate her, I just think I don't hate her. I just wish she would go away, and the best way to make her go away is to ignore her. I would say it's quite clear that it was never about punk rock. It was always about leeching off punk to raise one's status, and really, it's a lesson of the punk community that you all fell into it by reacting. If you ignored her, it wouldn't have happened. But on the other hand, it was kind of a silly and fun ride while it lasted, and I think we all saw this c conclusion coming. The question is, should John shoot his shot? The answer is no. But listen,
No?
no.
John, you don't want to give her $10 a month for three free DMs?
I don't even want to give her attention, nevertheless, money. You know what I mean? It really goes to show that personality really does is what counts, people. Remember that. And so listen, I don't know if there's any big lesson here. It's just it was what everyone was talking about this week, so we talked about it. So there you go. So let me see if I can sum this up. It was clear from the start that it was just an attempt to kind of milk off punk rock. Lots of people have done it before. She's certainly not the worst offender, and she's certainly not the best offender. And it's just kind of a blip. And it was, I guess it just goes to show how powerful social media and groupthink is. And everyone fell into it. And a lot of people threw bricks at her, which I didn't enjoy that dynamic. And the best way is just to ignore it, to make it to go away. But the fact that matter, here's what it is. The fact that matters, as much as people claim to be annoyed by it or hate it, they enjoyed being annoyed by it. You know what I mean? That's really what it was, you know, and that's the best part of the game. Anyway, let's play a song. Let's play some songs, and then we will come back. Let us roll the dice of destiny. I'll be 1 to 2, and we'll be 3 to 4, Sam will be 5 to 6. I go first, then M, then Sam. Let's play one of my all-time favorite Christmas songs, Christmas Wrapping by the Waitresses off. Actually, it's off one of their EPs. Anyway, Waitress is one of the best new wave bands ever. I love the Waitresses, so we're going to play that. And what are you going to play?
I'm gonna play Christmas at My House by the Dirty Nil, one of the best Christmas songs. Sam, what are you playing?
I literally just mentioned the sentence because it literally came up
Oh.
in one of these posts, apparently. So I'm playing Descendants Christmas Vacation.
The world.
my dad. And I think this dairy might be bad. We'll be right back.
are back. Let's hit up to a couple of stories, then we will wrap this Merry Christmas episode on up. NoFX have announced two more 10-inch EPs. They're actually I was confused by the label because the label was the Punk Rock Museum ODs. I had thought the Punk Rock Museum label for demos was something else, but this is just like the current name for the demos label, the Punk Rock Museum. It's really just demos from coasters and demos from single album, I guess it was called, right? Or double album or one of those three or two. People seem very annoyed by this, and they seem a little confused because NoFX ended, but it's not clear if NoFX is going to keep releasing music or if they're over totally. Sam and M, were you guys annoyed by this? Do you care about this? And the bigger question is do you care about demos? And here's my answer. Unless a demo is wildly different than the version that came out, I don't really care about demos. I'll listen to, like, if I've got like a demo record or demo bonus tracks, I'll listen to it like once and be like, oh, that was kind of interesting. And then I'll forget about it forever. That being said, you don't have to buy these. But that being said, these are $30 each. Sam, is this important information that should be documented as fun for the people that want it? Or is this milking a legacy?
Oh, boy. I don't know if you guys understand my issue with all of this and vinyl. Okay, so Clay Pigeon actually came out already. This is not brand new. It was actually released, I think, like August of 2024. Oh. So what this is literally repackaging in a smaller size of something that's already out. So Clay Pigeon originally, I remember this because I think it went up when I was on vacation and my husband was trying to get this when I was probably in an Asian country in a different time zone. Annoying. Yes. Whatever. also out on the same TPRMODS label. Because I did remember this coming out and going, what is this punk rock museum nonsense? Which, you know, triggered flags in my brain to be like, oh, are we opening up a record label for the museum now? Right? So this version of Clay Pigeon is a 10-inch format. There's already, so the original one or the other one that came out was a 12-inch. Why do we need to make it smaller? Now, my theory is make it smaller because all of the NoFX Completists needs to spend $30 more or $40 more to get this thing. I know my husband didn't go and buy it because we already have a copy. Because I think we need to slow our roll when it comes to buying every NoFX variant these days. So there's that. I'm not 100% sure what the heck is happening with this because I usually when you're pressing things in a smaller format, that means that said record label has to go and get different stamping. What is those plates called, John? Do you know what they're called?
They're usually just called stampers.
Yeah, the stampers. So essentially they have to go get stampers and maybe new test presses done for them. Now, I wouldn't be shocked if some of these test presses end up in the museum store for a really, really lovely high rate because, you know, that's how that goes these days. I'm not necessarily happy about this. The other question you had was about demos. Okay, so demos can be cool. Because especially if demos are early cuts of things and they're kind of like unresolved, so they're like in a way different versions of things, because sometimes I do find like loving demos more than like what they actually put on albums, because sometimes, you know, the rawness of a demo is I guess a better version, you know, because sometimes when you go into the recording studio to do it for real, you know, you have a producer like, working with the songs and moving things around, or like adding extra nuances, or adding too many woes to things. So it can be cool to have a demo, but again, I really do think that this is kind of like a cash grab for things. Like my husband, like, he's in band now, and his band actually has a demo version of two of the songs that's on their album, that's coming out on a split 7-inch with like three other bands from the New York Philly area. So I was like, at least that's like memorialized somewhere. And I actually kind of prefer those two tracks because they were like live demo tracks that was done together. So it's more like, it sounds more live when they actually like play it than what they recorded for the album. Yeah. So that's my take on that, John. M, do you have a t take on these NOFX 10 inches?
Yeah, I was really surprised with like the track list and stuff, and it's just like it doesn't seem like anything new. It just seems kind of like a cash grab. With demos, I'm in the same boat as both of you. I like demos when they are different than the song, or you kind of get a sense of like their songwriting process with it, because I love like kind of peeking behind the curtain, seeing how everything comes together. I think that's really fun. But it does have to be a pretty like spectacular demo to get into the rotation, or to be kind of a part of like that gets repeat listens. The Dirty Nil have a demo version of Caroline that is incredible, and I listen to that quite a bit. And just kind of like demos of like those types of songs are really fun. But if it's like, oh, here's the original and then the demo is very similar, I don't really see much point in that. Again, unless you're getting something really cool out of it, like you have like a studio banter or something in the background. Or it was with a different producer, it was something else, like a different cut of the song.
Well, there
Yeah.
you go. I'm sorry, Sam, go ahead.
Yeah, I also don't really care for 10 inches. John, do you care for 10 inches?
I generally they cost as much to manufacture as 12 inches,
Exactly.
or sometimes or even more,
Oh.
and they're kind of a pain to file with your record, so you kind of have a separate 10 inch section, and then I find that I rarely visit my 10 inch section, so I guess they can be kind of fun, but and it does make them stand out, but that being and but also bands never press a 10 inch record if you're distributing them to record stores, because 10 inch records famously do not sell in record stores because they get lost. Like
Yeah.
in the stand. So the only time you should ever make a 10-inch record is if you're making something special, people have to mail order, or maybe they have to buy the gig. So
Yeah, I don't care for 10 inches. They're a pain in the butt.
well, there you have it. Let's just hit maybe one or two stories real quick. Jane's Addiction, they're friends again, or so they say. Did we talk about this last week?
We
Yes.
did.
Oh, we did.
It
Okay,
we
well.
broke the news on the podcast.
There you go, listeners. Jane's Addiction is back. Well, actually, they're not back. They're just friends again.
They're
And
back
they're
to
not,
being friends.
but they're not even really friends. They're back to being business associates. So yeah. So let's see. I don't know, man. We interviewed Devo at Punk News, so check that out. We interviewed Mark Mothersbaugh about the new Devo documentary and the upcoming tour with the B-52s. Mark, total rock star and totally cool. Totally cool. So check that out. I don't know. M, Sam, anything else you want to talk about at the site that we should cover? Ted Milkman released two new songs. It was cool. I saw Joe Jack Talcum solo on Sunday. He covered a Mischief Brew track, which was cool, and he sounded awesome. Joe Jack Talcum, always a hero. And I saw Rodney on Sunday as well, actually. And I saw Dean on Sunday. So I saw three out of the four Ted Milkman on Sunday in separate places.
Nice. It's like a Where's Waldo kind of
With
thing.
the Dead Milkman.
Yeah.
Sam, anything else you want to cover? And any other social media stars you want to attack viciously?
Well, I don't like to attack people. I'm just gonna leave that out there. However, that topic was really out there for us to like not leave alone, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think a good rule of thumb is to be nice to people on social media unless they're being complete, jerks.
I think a good rule is if someone's annoying you on social media, just ignore them and they go away. That's what I think you should do.
Well, that is a very good rule, John, and I think you like to stick with it because social media doesn't like you sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Just like regular social, just like physical social as well.
Physical social media.
However, we do like you, and
Thank you.
the
Yes, we
hovercraft
do.
office really, really loves you because it misses you when you're not there.
Well, thank
It
you.
does.
I appreciate that. So next week we're gonna do our end of year episode, which will be fun. Although actually we might kick that a week after next week. We'll see how it goes. Best of a punk news coming up pretty soon. And so yeah, that's what's going on. I don't know, anything else you guys want to cover, talk about?
How was your lists? How did they come together?
It has not come together yet.
So, John, are you going to not sleep for 3 days, just like bang out like 25 write-ups? And then
I'm gonna
an entire listing of Hawkwind albums?
pretty much that. Actually, this is the first year where I'm probably not gonna have a Melvins category because for the first time in about 10 years, Melvins did not release at least five records this year, I don't think.
Oh boy.
Oh,
So
that'd be
it's
a
gonna be
while.
Hawkwind then.
It's gonna be Hawk. Well, Hawkwind released zero records this year because they're in total collab. Well, but they released about 40 archive releases this year, so maybe I'll do Hawkwind instead. You're right. Let's see. Melvins released one. Actually, maybe they did do five. Melvins released at least two albums this year. Let's see here. Well, they released some comps this year.
Does
So yeah,
comps count?
not really. Some with Melvins, sometimes I fudge it, but yeah. So it looks like they only released two albums this year. So that's not 10. That's not five. One time it was like seven. So, anyways.
That's a lot
Yeah,
for
well,
one
Melvins
year.
did tour a lot this year. I saw them twice in like 3 months.
Well, can you just
Ooh,
rank? Can you
nice.
rank your two times of seeing one and two?
Maybe I will. Maybe I will. So anyways,
We
yeah. Well, anyways, let's close it out with a song. I went first and M went first. So Sam, you go first, then M, then I'll play a song, and then we will wrap this all up and see everyone next week. So Sam, what's your final holiday tune?
Okay, so my final tune is by Xmas X. It is two kiddos of one of the members of Calling Hours, pretty much screaming into the ether under punk music. So I'm gonna play It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas because they just literally released this year.
Nice. I will play Crust Punk Santa will have his revenge on Portland. This is by Trans Panic, and that's off their recently released album Songs for Tranarchists.
And I will play Lee Scratch Perry's Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. And listener, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you. We'll see you, Sam and M. Sam, when are we going to see him?
Next week.
Take the light. Yeah.